You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Your time has come.
A storm is coming. Our storm. And when it arrives, it will shake the universe.
Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you April 29th, 2018. Wow, this year has just been flying by, hasn't it? A lot of interesting things going on in our world. I will be covering some of them here in the first half hour, dealing with some current events. And then in the second half hour, I'll be having Thule Productions and Wolf come by, and we'll be talking about controlled opposition. Then, in hour two, I will be talking about the nature of our enemy and caricatures of our enemy. And then in the final segment, if all goes according to plan, I will be talking about us. I will be talking about the nature of the Aryan. Symbolically, breaking down that word a little bit. So this is going to be something of a hodgepodge show. I do them once in a while, and it's a useful way for me to be able to cover some topics that I've wanted to get to, but that don't warrant a whole show dedicated to them. Oh, you better stay tuned, especially for the whole thing is going to be good. But hour two, when I deal with the movie Jaws, just, it's very, very enlightening. You'll see that movie in a whole new light. Let's start out with what's going on in the world today, here and now. I saw this story earlier today, and let's just call it a sign of the times. An electric road sign displayed an anti-Semitic message early Friday morning on a highway on the outskirts of Phoenix. The Pinal County Sheriff's Office received a call at 2:25 a.m. about an electronic road sign along Hunt Highway. Yeah, Hunt Highway. That's named after Governor George Hunt, I'm sure, an Arizona legend, that read, "Hail Hitler." So, Hail Hitler, HH, was seen on Hunt Highway, another HH, 88. And this article claims it's an incorrectly spelled reference to the Nazi salute. Not really, it's just a translation. You could say Heil Hitler, and that would be correct in German, or you could say Hail Hitler, like you hail a cab, by throwing out an open-handed salute. The road sign was hacked by an unknown person, and the words on the sign were changed, said Navide Forgani, public information officer to the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. Officers tried to turn off the sign, but it required a password, and officers could not immediately reach the private company that owned the sign. Well, that's pretty great. Kind of like those swastika and black sun crop circles. Indeed, a sign of the times. Hail Hitler on Hunt Highway. Let's talk geopolitics for a moment. It seems like there's now peace in Korea. North and South coming together. Some kind of Masonic-looking handshake between Mike Pompeo, now of the State Department, formerly head of the CIA. And soon, it's going to be Trump meeting with little Rocket Man. Right? all the dick jokes and the back and forth, the hero versus the heel, it all seemed like WWE, did it not? The fire and the fury. Now this is Trump's crowning achievement, yes. But is this only being wrapped up, this theater of war over there in Asia, so that all focus can be on the Middle East? In particular, Iran. And are we just dealing with another kind of Iron Sheik moment here? Maybe. But Mike Pompeo, soon after leaving Korea, went over to Saudi Arabia. Oh yes, our second greatest ally, which is also chock full of crypto greatest allies. If you get what I'm saying. Yeah, they're Jews. The House of Mossad. Mossadomy, actually. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, arrived in Saudi Arabia on Saturday on a hastily arranged visit to the Middle East as the United States aims to muster support for new sanctions against Iran. This is a quote from Pompeo. Iran's missiles prolong war and suffering in the Middle East. They threaten our security and economic interests, and they especially threaten Saudi Arabia and Israel, he said. Oh, really? What about the American missiles? Are those Freedom missiles raining down on Syria? Oh, yeah, these missiles and bombs, they're just saving countries. Like they did when they were bombing Serbia, right? Yeah, I actually posted something about Slobodan Milosevic, his trial, on the Tribune today. It's a very interesting documentary, so I suggest that you all do check that out. I hope everybody's doing all right in the chat, and I'm coming through well. Hey, good to see you all. The chat's been a little slow recently, but that's okay. We'll pick it back up here, won't we? Gonna bring some energy to this network, right? Some vigor. That's what I attempt to do, at least sometimes. At other times, I'm just really tired. I'm just pretending not to be tired here tonight. I'll be here with you the next 2 hours. Don't you worry about it, everyone. So, yeah, so Secretary of State Mike Pompeo over there in Saudi Arabia. Oh, yeah, Iran with their missiles. It's threatening everything. They're not launching missiles against anyone. Who is launching missiles? As I said, the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia, look what they're doing to Yemen. This should be utterly transparent to anybody who is even remotely aware of what's going on in the Middle East. The Jerusalem Post has an article here quoting Lieberman, that is Avigdor Lieberman, I believe. There are a few different Liebermans. It's definitely not Joe, spelled differently. Lieberman, Israel will react forcefully if Syria uses S-300 against it. This is referencing the missile defense that Russia gave to Syria. And Maurice Pinay has a comment on it. Goyim, take note. In the Judaic Imperium, the Goyim of Syria don't have a right to defend themselves from the Jewish state's offensive, self-defensive, invasions of Syrian airspace and bombings of Syria. Israel has a right to offensively defend itself, quote, right? Syrians are just Goyim. So Israel is saying to Syria, if you even attempt to defend your airspace against us, we will react forcefully. They already are reacting forcefully. They've been bombing them. So they're just saying, if you try to stop us from bombing you, we're going to bomb you even further. It's just ridiculous that anybody accepts this as being even somewhat legitimate is absurd. That this is legitimate foreign policy means we live in a clown world, bizarro world. But is it all WWE? Well, yes, it is a theater of war, but if you've listened to my WWE show before, you'd know that there are plenty of legitimate deaths and injuries that occur in WWE. So is it all staged and stage managed? Yes, a lot of it is orchestrated. But that doesn't mean that real people down there at the bottom, and this includes the wrestlers themselves, aren't getting injured and killed. This is what we see with the theater of war. But are the people at the highest levels ever really held accountable? Are they risking their lives? Well, they sure haven't been. But speaking of Saudi Arabia and WWE, there actually was recently an event in Saudi Arabia. WWE's Greatest Royal Rumble. Royal. I wonder if that's also a little tongue-in-cheek reference to the Saudi royalty. Now with Bin Salman modernizing Saudi Arabia. And this WWE spectacle was shown to these cheering Saudis who probably are really enjoying this kind of form of entertainment. Much like the dumbed-down masses here in the United States do. Hell, I liked it myself when I was younger. Even though I knew it was all orchestrated, it was a bit entertaining. But apparently there was a little bit of a kerfuffle because there, between matches, there were some images of WWE's sultry, sexy stars, who are some of them probably trannies, scantily clad for some promos. Oh, it was a mistake. This should not have happened. We do not condone this. I think what we are seeing over in Saudi Arabia, though, is essentially the kind of Janet Jackson nipple slip from the Super Bowl. Oh, this was completely unplanned, and oh, they're going to face some kinds of penalties or something, fines. This was all carefully planned. They are running an operation, a psychological operation now on the Saudi people and on the rest of the world concerning the Saudi people. We are supposed to now embrace them with open arms. Literal head choppers. I'm not saying that our forms of execution and imprisonment are any better, but nonviolent drug offenders in Saudi Arabia, they're still getting their heads chopped off. Oh, but when ISIS does it, that's supposedly a problem. When our greatest ally, Saudi Arabia, does it, that's okay. But we know the truth about ISIS, the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, and the American funding of them, and the Wahhabism coming from Saudi Arabia, of course. What an awful group of people to be allied with, but that was the big step that Trump made right after getting into office, was it going over to Saudi Arabia? Still remember the images of Steve Bannon doing a little, feeling unwary with this while the sword dance is going on. It's while Bannon was still with the Trump admin. And, of course, the big glowing orb that the leaders had their hands on. Very, very interesting. Did it have any real significance, or was it all show, part of the psychological operation? Theatrics, WWE. It's all been WWE. It's been ridiculous, and I've shown before how Trump was actually the top donor to the Vince... Actually, the other way around. Strike that, reverse it. Vince McMahon was the top donor to Trump's charitable organization. So these two have been great buddies for a long time. Please do listen to the wrestling shows... Actually, shows, yeah, that I did concerning Vince McMahon and his corrupt operation. And I got into Rowdy Piper and all that as well. Another person I think who was likely knocked off, whacked, killed, assassinated, murdered. That is likely that this whole Saudi Arabia Trump connection is likely why WWE now has a 10-year contract in Saudi Arabia. What an idiocracy we're living in, isn't it? Absolutely incredible. But speaking of people getting assassinated, that could be what has recently happened, not just with my deceased friend Nick Spiro, and possibly Paul Hickman, and also Victor Thorne, who I interviewed, but also somebody who I organized with, and that would be Robert Ransdell. This person has been known to me for quite some time. I first came in contact with him in 2013. This was when I was organizing the Renegades in America Roadshow and then putting together the documentary with it. He agreed to be interviewed. He had some affiliations with the National Alliance, which he was trying to revive. And he provided a good interview. We had a good conversation in Cincinnati. And there's a lot that you never saw. The footage is all gone now, unfortunately. Interactions with this crazy Christard. I do think I released at least that section, part of it. It was a long conversation we had with Robert. That was just the beginning of things. He helped to organize perhaps one of the biggest demonstrations, public demonstrations for the White Man March in the Cincinnati area. And he also had me work with him on his Senate run. Yes, I actually designed his site. I was his webmaster, whiteguard.us and then thewhiteguard.com. I changed the domain name. We had both. I changed it after he got international press for his With Jews We Lose campaign, when Times of Israel was covering him and all these outlets here in the United States, because, well, on the original domain, I had not put any privacy, so at least my P.O. Box address was showing, and it was showing that I was the person behind that site. And at the time, I didn't really want a bunch of crazy angry Jews hunting me down for this Senate campaign. But let's be honest here, I've got a bunch of crazy angry Jews who would love to see me deceased anyway, because of everything I've done since then. Robert has been around doing his own thing. I hadn't heard much from him recently, but I do know that he had gotten in some legal trouble for his MLK Day protest, where he was arrested for trespassing on government-owned property. Well, he was just exercising his First Amendment. And he was eventually cleared for that with some legal assistant. An experienced lawyer from another state helped him out in preparing his defense. Robert Ransdell, he died, apparently, from the reports I've seen, which might not be completely accurate, in a car crash, supposedly with a drunk driver, and he, from some reports of people who supposedly know him, he was unable to get out of the car screaming for help as he was being burned alive because his car exploded. I don't know. I don't know if this is the case. Hopefully we'll be able to find out more. It could just be scare tactics. They want to shut us all up. They haven't been able to shut us down completely online. They want to shut us up. They want us afraid. But I'll tell you what, Robert Ransdell would never want for his death to be something that causes whites to be quiet, to cower even more behind their keyboards and their anonymity. He would want his death to be an inspiration for action. There is another person, actually, who died recently, who was likely killed for what he did. This person was not a pro-white by any stretch of the imagination, but most people who saw him likely thought, wow, that looks like quite an Aryan man. And that would be this very popular DJ/producer named Avicii. Now, I had honestly never heard of him until somebody called into the roundtable last week and told me about Avicii's death. I didn't really know what to think about it at the time. It did seem a little bit strange. He died in Oman. And I'm just looking for this article that I put out today. I got kind of buried. That's unfortunate. Oh, I know what happened. Any event. His name is Tim Bergling. He's from Sweden, known as Avicii. And he was very, very popular. Billions of views on YouTube. Topping the charts. He was really making a kind of crossover between EDM, electronic dance music, and popular music with his singles. Huge tours. You see these concerts, and it's just masses of people just loving what he's putting out through the speakers. He was really becoming one of the most influential musicians in recent history, until he actually dropped off the scene, pretty much. He left the spotlight in 2016, and now, just recently, actually on Hitler's birthday, April 20th, he died at the age of 28. Yeah, 6 years younger than myself. His family, they're going along with the storyline that he just killed himself while vacationing in Oman, which is actually really close to Saudi Arabia, bordering Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and Yemen, right out there on the Arabian Peninsula. I don't know what he was really even doing there. Yeah, supposedly he killed himself. They said he struggled with thoughts about meaning, life, happiness. He could not go on any longer. He wanted to find peace. They said, "Our beloved Tim was a seeker, a fragile artistic soul searching for answers to existential questions. An overachieving perfectionist who traveled and worked hard at a pace that led to extreme stress." Hey, that sounds valid enough. I can understand that. Somebody who's supposedly at the top of his game, not really feeling like it because he's just working very long hours. He feels incredible pressure on himself. Might be boozing it up a little bit too much. Might even be taking drugs. Who really knows? There are a lot of artists out there who either really did die because of this very same situation, you know, the 27 Club. Some of them very well might have have faked their deaths and then perhaps reaped the rewards of having been such a famous person while not having to deal with all the stress of being widely known. They adopted a disguise. Everybody always said this about Jim Morrison, that he didn't really die. He was spotted here or there, or the same thing with Elvis Presley. And Elvis definitely wasn't the 27 Club, right? I don't think anybody's ever said that about Janis Joplin or Mama Cass. Any event, it doesn't seem like this could be the case because of at least one thing that Avicii had put out back in 2015, the year before he just cut everything off. He put out a music video that dealt explicitly with child trafficking. The whole thing is about these children who got trafficked in the past, and now they are seeking revenge on the men who did it to them. And they're killing them in brutal ways. The song is titled For a Better Day. It has 60 million views out there on YouTube. His famous song, Wake Me Up, has about 1.5 billion. Quite impressive. But this one at 60 million is also fairly significant, especially when you're dealing with the subject of killing these absolute monsters who deserve this vengeance. I'll let you hear just a little segment of this and tell you that it's really satisfying to watch, to be honest, because, well, first I've got to unmute the browser, don't I? I thought it was a really long silent intro. It's really satisfying to watch, especially because the guy at the end who they kill seems to be a head of state, some bigwig politician who ends up getting lynched in front of an angry mob. Cold. On a caution wind, need the bleeding sky. Okay, so that is what the song sounds like. Now, go watch the music video and let me know whether you think that he was off because he knew something about this and how it goes all the way up to the top, as he shows. And working in the music industry, I'm sure he saw quite a bit of trafficking and perhaps did not want to take part himself, which is why he dropped off the scene. This is obviously what has led to a lot of conspiracy theories following his death. Regardless of how or why he died, and even if he did commit suicide, I still blame it on these people because they likely are the ones who drove him to this because he saw them operating at the highest echelons all around us and couldn't live in such a sick, disgusting world. So, but regardless of any of that, he's dead now. So let's help bring his vision that he laid out in this music video to fruition. Do not the people behind the trafficking of children need this swift and brutal retribution? I say indeed they do. And we know who's trafficking children, don't we? Don't we? They even admit themselves, really, if you're paying attention. Do you remember that article from Haaretz in 2016? Israel becoming a refuge for pedophiles, warns advocate for child sex abuse victims. Yes, of course it is a haven for criminals of all sorts. The Israelis, the Chabad Mafia, well-known traffickers, children and drugs and all sorts of other destructive vices. We have another story about trafficking coming out in a big way recently. Allison Mack, the former star of Smallville, with this self-help so-called sex cult that was really all about trafficking children. Allison Mack herself was listed on IMDb as a Hebraic hottie, and from her own writings, she does talk about her Jewish heritage. Oh, and guess what? It was Bronfman's, the Bronfman family, financing it. You can read about that on the Tribune as well. I'll be back in just a little bit.
Used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
I'm
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. This is the second half hour, and as I said, I've got Thule Productions here with me, and we're going to be talking a little bit about controlled opposition, a subject that he brought up to me just earlier today, and I decided that I could squeeze it in here to this hodgepodge of a show, so I'll be talking to him, and it appears not Wolf, but Georgian Patriot here for the next half hour. Thule, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Because I've got my thing set to the speaker. Just want to make sure that the sound is...
You're very quiet. You're actually very quiet.
All right, let me see something. Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay, I just did it to headset. Wolf is here. He managed to get his Wi-Fi working, so he's in with us, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know the caller then. So let's bring on Wolf and then Georgian Patriot. Wolf, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, for some reason I couldn't get the app to work, so I called in and I'm going, they don't know I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Let's also bring in Georgian Patriot and then we'll get this topic started. Georgian Patriot, welcome.
Hello, Don. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I was expecting an accent. You know, I don't know if you're Georgian as
No, I live here. I live in America.
Okay. So Georgian, not as in the state that used to be a home for some prisoners here in America, but instead the country that borders Russia?
Yeah, that one, yep.
Okay. Just clarifying. Thank you. Okay. Well, it's good to make your acquaintance here. Welcome to the show. So let's get started on this topic, which I've dealt with a little bit in the past, and it has to do with some other people who are out there broadcasting. And the reason we're going to be discussing this here tonight is not because we're jealous of them, because we wish we could get their viewers or any of that petty stuff. It's because we genuinely care about this cause and would like to make sure that all of the viewers and listeners out there are aware of controlled opposition figures. So let's start with Thule here and just have you get into what you've been seeing recently.
Well, everything that I've been notified of came basically through Wolf Church. As most of my subscribers know, and likely you, is I've been busy for the last couple of months working on my book, which takes a tremendous amount of time, you know, daily. Now, the first time I heard about Brexit came directly from Wolf. And
you mean Brexit Party? Not the movement and the vote that
Brexit
happened.
Brexit Party, Oliver. Brexit Party, words,
yes.
Oliver.
Used to be Guyan Renaissance. And now he's actually rebranded, no longer Brexit Party, deleted all of his videos. He's Brythonic something or other. I don't know. He keeps reinventing himself. But yes, go on. Brexit Party. You were made aware of this. I had seen some of their stuff as well. And there were definitely a lot of red flags.
To sum it up briefly, I listened a bit to what the things he was saying to some of the shows. And after what I've heard, I said to Wolf and George here, I said, this guy appears to be a ringleader whose purpose is to incite division, to incite arguments and debates amongst white nationalists and national socialists. This cannot be conducive to our movement to incite such arguments. On top of that, he invites kikes, Jews, onto the show, Jews for Hitler. And I stated, no real national socialist would deal with the enemy in such fashion. If this was a war, and we were to capture Jews as prisoners of war, that would be one thing to, you know, interrogate and to pry information out of them. That's one thing. But hanging out with them as though you're having a cup of coffee and some cigarettes is absolutely wrong and a red flag to me. Quite suspicious. And after everything Oliver said recently about white nations should fend for themselves, they shouldn't be united globally, they should basically just do their own thing.
There's no such thing as white. He was parroting that line that, as were others, that there really is no such thing as the white race. You can be proud to be Irish or German. I've heard Jews say this kind of thing 100 times.
Exactly. And You know as well as I do that the purpose of a movement, it's been like that for decades, has been to unite the white race globally, because only united do we stand a chance against our enemy. And he seems to be driving a wedge into that, trying to divide us. And other people on his show, one of them having been, if I remember correctly, George, correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I think it was Patrick Little that had an argument with one of the associates of Oliver and basically put him into the ground on that one, and clearly say he will never longer be on the show. Now, you've got Alfred Schaefer, after the fact of what Oliver said, defending him still. Right? This is why I'm going to get right into the point about Alfred Schaefer here, because this thing is important. This Alfred Schaefer character, right? First of all, the man sits in Germany with the swastika banner behind him, right? He talks about murdering off Jews. He says these things about the Jews so freely, and yet he doesn't get arrested by the police in any shape or form, while his sister supposedly is sitting in a prison for Holocaust denial. I tell you right now, this to me seems like bullshit. Excuse my language, but
he says they're scared of him. He says that they are scared of him. Now, I really think that they were scared of Ernst Zundel, who was imprisoned in America, then Canada, and then eventually sent to Germany because he was publicly denying the Holocaust, not calling for the extermination of 600,000 Jews in a bloodbath as Alfred Schaefer has done on multiple occasions on the Brexit Party stream. Yes, of course, this is very, very suspicious that he has not been arrested. But you know what also is suspicious is that the channel is still up. Have any of the videos even been removed? I've put out videos that have perhaps even gotten less views that have been removed. The same thing with Sinead. We have put out content that has been censored over and over again for even the slightest infraction of their community standards. Why, oh why, would YouTube allow this to continue?
And my channel has gotten a strike just after the video that Wolf, George, and I did, where we actually were on a call with Pastor Dan and with Alfred Schaefer, talking about, you know, how Dennis Wise keeps inciting hatred between Christians and pagans. You know, pointing out, why would you do such a thing? And why would you hang out with Jews on radio shows such as Brexit Party with a guy, Oliver? And just shortly after that, I got a strike for a video that had been up for years concerning Putin, the oligarch Jew. And now most of my videos, or the ones that recently were uploaded, have all been basically disabled on its features. No comments, no views, nothing. You can just watch it. So to sum it up, what I believe is the case here is that Alfred Schaefer is an agent working for the enemy. Now, whether his sister is really in prison and is really actually there for Holocaust denial or not, I'm not quite sure. Perhaps she is in there for that reason. Perhaps he made a nice little deal, you know, with the government, you know, to work for them, playing the listening post, playing the, you know, one to which a little division down movement, you know, so that maybe his sister might get out soon or something. I tell you right now, if this was a prison and we were all in, you know, inside in prison, like, say, the Aaron Brotherhood, all of us would say that this guy made a deal. He's a rat. He made a deal with the cops. He made a deal with the authorities, you know? It's that obvious. Mm-hmm. And what else did he say? I mean, you know, for example, he keeps talking about Jews joining our side against the enemy. And I got to say, like, are you fucking kidding me? Jews? They're our enemy. And it doesn't matter whether in World War II we had Jews in the Wehrmacht or not. Hitler, notwithstanding the greatest man he is, did make some mistakes. He was too nice. We must not repeat the same mistakes in the past. We must learn from them, you know? So these are all red flags to me. And then I want to mention one more thing. My German comrades, my German contacts in Germany have been mentioning the name Volkslehrer, a supposed German nationalist who in his own way has been trying to teach the youth about, you know, World War II and things in a subtle way. But he supposedly praises Putin and Russia as though he's baiting the German people in a way to prepare them for Putin and Russia. And, you know, the possibility, everybody in Germany is talking about the possibility of there being eventually a war with Russia, and then Russia plowing on through with three army groups, you know, through Germany and whatnot.
Liberating. They want to be seen as liberators.
Yep, it's almost like the whole thing that Stalin wanted to do during World War II before Hitler thwarted it, Operation Barbarossa. being the continuation thereof, right? So you've got this Volksleger guy who's like, you know, subconsciously preparing the people to warm up to the Russians. And we've got Alfred Schäfer, who ended up actually defending this guy, Volksleger, to my good friend Inanna, who is a National Socialist, you know, and an esotericist. And she ended up saying to me then in private, like, yeah, I think there's something wrong with this Alfred Schäfer guy. Because this Volksleger guy, all of my comrades, all of our friends are saying there's something not right with this Volksleger guy. He seems almost like a plan put there by the Russians or something. And there's many others like him out there, too.
Plenty here in the United States, there are plenty of American nationalists who would love to see us taken over by Russia. They would think this is the greatest thing ever. Complete liberation. They would worship Putin. They already do. Let's now go on to Wolf and see what he has to say about this whole controlled opposition operation.
Yeah, it's been very telling, and I have to give Stefan credit. He definitely bird-dogged it from the beginning and called it out right away. The thing that caught me in the beginning first was Dennis Wise and another character called Jews for Hitler openly, basically it would be like in medieval terms, if pagans were camped on one side and Christians were camped on the other of a siege of a castle, it's supposed to be allies, those two got up and were trying to incite a fight between pagans and Christians. And religion has tore us apart for hundreds of years. Martin Luther nailed a piece of paper to a church wall, and it led to hundreds of years of warfare, pain, and death between white people. So there was nothing to be gained by inciting debate between religion, but it was very telling to me to see it. What do we got? We got a Jew manipulating a Christian to cause division between the ranks. And I agree with Stefan on everything he's noticed with Alfred Schäfer. Highly suspicious. There were some highly suspicious things about Britex. I won't get into that because it's too much speculation, but I will say that we made our video. It did stop them from trying to initiate infighting between us based on religion. And then he went off on this insane version of nationalism and attacking America. From my perspective, looking at it now, it almost seems like the Jews like to run little tests, little experiments to see what they can get to take hold. You know, back in World War II, Germany was standing. They were the wall between communism and Stalin and everything that he was trying to take over from Europe. Now we don't have that. Worse off, the leaders of every European country are these useful idiots that are inciting anger and hatred and mistrust among their own white constituents. And from what Stefan says, it would right now, a lot of people in Europe would welcome someone like Putin coming charging in. And it's almost like the Jews know that they've pushed white people to the edge, because it's always their game is to run that edge of taking over, but never push white people so far that they openly revolt, because they know they're going to lose if we ever get them on a warfare battlefield, because we dominate. So they're always running this edge, and I honestly think it's a sign of fear. I think they're scared that once one white country decides to go full 1488 and revolt and throw these people out and start kicking the Jews out and taking care of business, others are going to follow, or others are going to want to help. It would be like if, you know, the blacks took all the land in Rhodesia, many people would be doing everything they could to try to help the whites, not in Rhodesia, but in South Africa, to defend their territory. If they decide to do armed resistance, we would be doing everything to help them and prevent our own governments from stopping the whites there from taking their land back. And the Jews know this will happen inevitably on their path.
Yeah, it'd be dominant.
Like they were trying to incite a level of discord between us, like they were testing the ground. Yeah, and I'm happy to say it didn't take that well.
It'd be like
one final note.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that Alfred Schäfer, I think his target was Georgian Patriot. Young guys in the movement to be a male leader that they can look up to. And that's why all of this seemed to happen all at the same time, to promote him up, to get the young guys to follow people like him.
Because younglings are impressionable and our youth is our future. Therefore, they target, as Schäfer put it so eloquently, I wage psychological warfare. Yeah, psychological warfare. Psy operation on the youth to try to impress them with, you know, misleading them with wrong ideas. That's the deal here. Because, Chief, I tell you right now, the guy ignored me on that video. He didn't even address anything I've said. The guy completely doesn't like me. I know that for a fact. I can tell by the way he, his facial expression, the way he looks when he turns his camera off, when we're on the call, when I address the things that need to be addressed. And he doesn't really deal with Wolfie either, but he certainly's got his eyes fixed on George, because George is 18, impressionable, a young man who is intelligent, bright, and he wants to lead him like a wolf in sheep's clothes towards the wrong direction. But go ahead,
Yeah, let's. We'll go over to George and Patriot in just a moment. I wanted to mention how what Wolf was saying about the whole domino effect of white people kicking out the Jews and taking back control of their destiny. I think it's very much real, and what they are afraid of, they really do not want to set that off into motion. That's why they have controlled opposition. And with the discussion of Christians versus pagans and everything, it does seem like the Christian element, especially the ones who embrace orthodoxy, are the ones who are so diehard for Russia, because they see Russia as the great defender of the faith, even though Russia is 10% Muslim, while Sweden, which is supposedly so cucked, and it is, like all of our countries here, is 4% Muslim. It might be up to 5 now. But of course they will never mention this about the demographics over there or all of the philo-Semitic anti-Gentile laws that are in place in countries like Russia. Now, in terms of infighting, it's something that I get accused of often because I am willing to discuss my thoughts on controlled opposition. And I've been accused of being so inciting hatred towards Christians because of the work that's put out here on the network exposing Christianity. We have to understand that there are a lot of people within our race, and there have been for hundreds of years, who understand that Christianity has done some really bad things to us and is an alien ideology that has been a Trojan horse. However, I was not interested in doing these debates. Oliver tried to get me on these shows, probably thinking it would bring in some good ratings for him, but I really have no interest in debating. We've done shows, Wolf Thule and myself, about the Norse pantheon, going through almost all of the gods and goddesses. And so we are not out here. Well, what we're doing inherently could anger Christians, but it's not like we're trying to engage in all-out battle with them, because that's a waste of time and energy and gets us focusing our anger and hatred on each other rather than on the Jew who is behind all of this divisiveness.
I wanted to say one quick thing that is very important. With these so-called Christians, right? Like Dennis Wise. Well, I'm not saying necessarily he does that, but we've got Christians out there. They call themselves patriotic Europeans against the Islamization of the West, Pegida, who align themselves with the Kikes, with the Jews, right, against the Muslim. You got to remember, the Muslim problem in Europe is a problem. They need to be out of there, sure. But let's not forget, there are Muslims out there who are fighting against the Jews, like Hezbollah, for example. We had 60,000 Muslims in the Waffen-SS, of which Leon de Grelle and Hitler spoke highly of. So these Christians want us to focus our attention just solely on the Muslims and divert it away from the Jews, who are the problem, who are the ones bringing in the Muslims into Europe. It's not Bashar al-Assad who's bringing them into Europe, and it's not Iraq or Lebanon doing it. It's Jews doing it. Mm-hmm. And so we need to focus our eyes on the Jews. They're the ones who are doing it.
Right.
But I think Trotsky should say something too.
The SS, they were not focusing all of their energy on the Christians in the Wehrmacht. The SS was not a Christian organization. Himmler was the furthest thing from a Christian. But they weren't waging war against the well-meaning Germans who were going to church every Sunday. Not at all. They knew where their energy and hatred had to be focused, and they could work on those theological issues over time. Well, they would have had they not been cut so short. Let's go over to Georgian Patriot. We haven't really heard anything from him yet, and he seems to be someone who is apparently at the center of a lot of this controlled opposition effort. George and Patriot, do you agree with their analysis? I honestly really haven't checked out the shows where you make an appearance or anything like that. I really don't have time. These things just go on and on. Seems like such a time waster where nothing really ever is accomplished. But George and Patriot, what role do you see yourself playing in all of this?
So I do agree with what Fool Productions and my friend Wolf was saying. And I have participated in few of Brexit streams. I heard of him because I saw him and Brian Rue, you know, on a live stream. So I was interested in this live stream thing so I could get in there and meet other people. And I have met other people on this live stream. So I thought it was a good opportunity for me to come meet people like Jim Rizzoli and all kinds of other people in this movement. And I was very excited to do it because I've been awake since I was 16, and I've been slowly making videos on my channel. It takes a lot because I have a live school, so I try my best to, you know, take my time to make every single video. I use iMovie. It takes a while to make everything very crisp and clean. And I heard of Alfred Schaefer after his sister was put in jail. That's what we hear. He was put in jail. And I was watching a video Brian Rue uploaded about this, and I was like thinking, who is this Alfred Schaefer guy? And then I started seeing him talking on the Brexit stream, and I was very interested in him, and I felt bad for him because, you know, his sister's in jail. So I thought that I would – one time I was on one of the Brexit streams, and I met him. And me and him simply got along. He liked me, and I thought, oh, that's cool. Alfred Schaefer likes me. That's good. And I always like to, you know, be friendly with everyone in this movement. I'm glad I'm on your show right now, Kyle, so I like to get along with everybody. So, and then I made two live streams. One of them was yesterday and the one before. And the first live stream was with me, Stefan, and Wolf, and Schaefer was in there too. And we were trying to stop this fight between Christians and pagans.
Pastor Dan.
And Pastor Dan too. I'm sorry, I forgot that he was there. And we were addressing one of the live streams that Brexit had with Dennis Wise and Jews for Hitler. They were attacking pagans, and they were just saying, oh, they're Satanists and they're anti-Christian. They don't get what's it called, banned on YouTube. They don't get their videos don't get shut down, which is obviously not true, seeing what you guys go through. So we made that video, and we definitely, you know, made them stop. So they can Stefan and Wolf can clarify that, which is true, that, you know, after we made that live stream, they stopped. But I fortunately don't have enough time to, like I said, he was making 8-hour streams, which is, you know, it's very unusual. It makes you think, is he even human, Oliver? Was he even human, you know, having like multiple streams every day, 8-hour streams or something? It's
he does seem robotic. I know what you're saying. Or like an alien with very little life or
like
vigor. Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it.
Crypto-chew, yeah.
Yeah, it just did not seem natural. Did not seem like his heart was in it to be doing that, like he was probably getting paid or compensated in some way or being forced to do it.
He reminds me, in a robotic way, as you've pointed it out, like Evalian, you know? This kind of artificial way of appearing and such, but I don't want to get into Evalian. You know, that's just something on the side here.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick,
sure,
is, as a pagan, I'll say this. I have a few Christian friends who respect our pagan ways, who are interested in fighting against a common enemy, which happens to be the Jew. And it is basically no different than when German Waffen-SS soldiers and, you know, Waffen-SS soldiers from other countries, including from Sweden, including from Norway, Denmark, and Belgium, and France, and even, you know, the Muslim volunteers, and even volunteers from India, all stood together against a common enemy, which was what? Communism, and of course, world Jewry. So when I speak of these Christians, as I pointed out, you know, like Pegida, I'm speaking of these so-called Judeo-Christians, you know, who think that religion matters more than, you know, our, you know, racial and political movement.
Okay. So we only have about 3 more minutes here before going to the break. And I want to see if there was anything that anybody wanted to conclude with here. Please do let people know how to find the show that you've already done so that they can go and watch it for themselves and get up to speed on this topic.
Well, I'll be uploading this I wanted to ask you for permission to use that video that you put together that shows Alpha Chiva and the Brexit.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. That's all their content anyway. Just picked a few pieces.
Yeah, you just need to send me the link so I can download it, and I'm going to upload it with this here, with this half an hour segment, cut it together, and upload it to my channel, Fool Production, so people can view it.
Okay, great. I'll actually play that audio for the break here instead of the music and the commercials, so people can hear it who are listening to the show, so they can understand what we're talking about. Wolf, anything that you'd like to close with?
You know, at some point, if you'd ever like to have you back on for a discussion about, there is a 50-pound elephant in the room that we don't point out to the Christians that are in our movement very much, but it's something that they need to address. And it is, you know, the biggest supporter of Israel, the people that constantly continue to vote these idiots into office and drink down the mainstream media Kool-Aid, are not Jews in Israel. They're not Muslims living over here. They're white, Jewish, Zionist Christians. They're in church. You don't need to go far. They're in a church down the street from your house. And, you know, pagans never cease to show up for every fight. We show up for every fight. But I don't hear near enough about the Christians on our side wanting to go protest these great big massive churches or just something about these idiot Zionist Christians. And, that's another discussion, but I just want to get that out there because it's something I've noticed, and it needs to be called out for guys like Dennis Wise that want to get on pagans all the time. Because we show up for every fight, but for some reason we give them a pass on not addressing that problem.
One of the big problems, I think, is that they've been able to label us with this term pagan, and that supposedly just includes anybody in the world who's not of Abrahamic faith, right? So there are Indian pagans, and there are Chinese pagans, and all sorts of different kinds of pagans. But what we are is European pre-Christians. We are the people who honor the religion of our ancestors for thousands and thousands of years, time immemorial, which at one time does appear to be united. Now, and a lot of these old elements, of course, were brought to the forefront with Christianity. They were embraced by Christianity so it could be an effective Trojan horse. Let's go to Georgia Patriot and see if he has any final thoughts here.
So I just wanted to say that if anyone who's listening to the show wants to see the streams I did with Schaefer over the last few months, you can go to my channel. It's Georgian Patriot 1998. And I definitely agree with everything Wolf and Stefan has said. And I express unity amongst our Christian and pagan brothers and all European peoples against the common enemy. And I don't care what some white nationalists get a little have different opinions, but I don't mind working with non-whites as well to defeat the common enemy.
Okay. Well, thanks.
As long as they're not Jews.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for joining the show here, guys. I will now put on the audio from Brexit Party. Take care.
You too.
600,000 of the top Jews, the Zionists, or whatever you want to call them, have them executed because you got to do something to please the Goyim who are pissed off as hell, and then say, okay, any more Jewish Malthians, and then you see what happens to those who misbehaved. That's what's going to happen to you. And after this bloodbath, which has to happen, I mean, that's only a tiny fraction of the number that they have genocided of our race, so nobody could possibly have any objections to killing, let's say, the top 600,000 Jews. And then all those Jews who did come out onto our side, like Reuben, of course, we're going to protect him. He's not, has nothing to fear, but that has to happen. There has to be some signal to the humanity that we are taking this matter seriously. This is the biological response to the biological attack that we have now recognized. And if 600,000 is too much, maybe 500,000 dead Jews. 500,000 dead Jews would be the right answer. The top ones, the Rothschilds, and all those who have, all those who go to the AIPAC meetings, all those who are teaching our children anal sex, all those who are inviting all the invaders and so forth. Those ones, everyone who has had their hand in these games, and it's not hard to find out who they are. Maybe we'll only find 50,000, whatever. Some number of them have to be strung up in the trees. All those who are covering up for what happened to the USS Liberty, all those who are covering up to what happened to John F. Kennedy, we will find a certain number of Jews who are guilty and their families.
The other thing is with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives. Don't kid yourself. But they say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families.
I will tell you, I would be very tough on families because the families know what's happening.
Because they killed the Germans. Every German has been eligible for being exterminated just because they're German. So we can kill all those Jews who have any guilt on their hands. And that will satisfy the goyim, yeah, that's us, and then we can have peace.
Where's that Evian girl today, or whatever her name is?
Valiant, she's married in West Virginia. She had a miscarriage. She was pregnant. She had a miscarriage.
Oh, okay. Notice how she got all the attention, and why. You know what I mean? Because, see, they're looking.
She's cute. She's gorgeous. Well, you shouldn't speak. It's Ruben's turn.
Why are you getting angry, Brian?
Condoleezza, you shouldn't speak.
You're not letting us talk. You're not. There's no
argument. Condoleezza, don't speak. Condoleezza, don't speak. It's Ruben's turn.
Don't speak, Condoleezza.
It's Ruben's turn. Condoleezza, you're out of line. You're out of line, Condoleezza. It's Ruben's turn. Don't speak. Condoleezza, don't speak.
Ruben, I was trying to.
Condoleezza, don't speak. It's Ruben's turn. Condoleezza, you're out of line. I'm not going to let you talk. Brian. It's Ruben's turn. Condoleezza, don't speak. Condoleezza, it's not Brian. Your turn. Brian. We agreed that Ruben was going to speak. Condoleezza, it's not your turn. Condoleezza, don't speak. Condoleezza, don't speak. It's Ruben's turn. Condoleezza, don't speak. I don't want you to. I don't want Condoleezza. It's Ruben's turn to speak. Condoleezza.
Brian, medication time.
Yeah, I'm Alfred Schaefer. My primary focus is psychological warfare. And the last people that wake up, we give them a rope, show them the tree, and say they can go hang themselves because anybody that stupid is not worthy of being amongst us. And that's the message we have to put out there. Full force, no compromises. What people can start doing is those people who are learning that their 10-year-olds are being taught Holocaust and anal sex in school, they need to go to that school, get hold of that teacher, drag that teacher out, whip him and hang him or do something so that stops.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. There you heard some very interesting conversation. You know, Reuben. Hey, you know, that's the Jews for Hitler guy. That's actually the name of Lana Loktev's father. Isn't that interesting? That's just a little side note there. Well, this is the section now where I am going to talk a little bit about the nature of the Jew. And I'm first really going to wrap up some current event type stuff, but this ties in because, of course, it deals with Jews. And based Kanye West. Yes, Kanye West put out a tweet about Donald Trump, supporting Trump. He's coming out as a big Trump-tard. And he tweets out this photo of himself in a MAGA hat with two white guys. And everybody just loses it. Oh, the alt-right loves it. Sure, Joe Roper was just absolutely ecstatic at this one. A lot of you guys might not know who that is. Oh yeah, this was big, big news. Based Kanye West. Conservatives love it. They're part of the hip, edgy counterculture. Yes. Absolutely amazing. Yes, Kanye West, the same person who just recently tweeted that Emma Gonzalez is his hero. A tweet from April 28th. This was after the fact that he endorsed Donald Trump, saying Emma Gonzalez is his hero. It does not look like he was saying that ironically either. Kanye West, was he really with white guys there, though? No, my Judar went off immediately. I said, oh, it looks like Kanye is hanging with a couple of Jews. I wasn't able to identify these people, but they are actually very, very important in the biz. Lucian Grange was one of the guys, the one on the left. He's the chairman and chief executive officer of Universal Music Group. In 2013, 2015, and 2016, he topped a Billboard magazine's Power 100 list as the most powerful person in the music business, the only person to ever hold that distinction three times, and the first to earn that position for consecutive years. This guy runs the biz. Lucian Grange, this Jew, so based. absolutely based. Lior Cohen was the other guy. I should have known this. I've done shows about anti-white rap. Lior Cohen has been involved in hip-hop for more than 30 years. He was managing rappers for Rush Productions, and then he worked with Def Jam doing so. Then he took on a leadership role at Warner Music Group, and then in 2012, he left Warner and started up his own label, 300 Entertainment. He was actually named YouTube Global Head of Music on September 28th, 2016. This guy is so based and it only even gets better. But this is a guy who is well known as basically running the rap biz. He's been there forever. There's actually a somewhat mainstream article about Lior Cohen that says, this is from Complex, the magazine Complex, if there were a shadowy Illuminati controlling the world of rap, Lior Cohen would be its all-seeing eye, the man behind the scenes, pulling the strings of the most powerful players and reaping the benefits. Mos Def rapped, corporate force is running this rap shit. A tall Israeli is running this rap shit. Quasi-homosexuals is running this rap shit. The tall Israeli he was referencing is Lior Cohen. Yes, he's an Israeli. A little bit more about his background. In 1984, he had been promoting some rap shows, one of them featuring Run DMC, moved to New York. He then got a job with Rush Productions, or Rush Management as it became known. He was then managing people like Curtis Blow, Houdini, Run DMC, LL Cool J, the Beastie Boys, Oy Vey, and Public Enemy with all of their anti-white crap. Their C-rap, their crap. That's what it is that this guy was producing, anti-white crap. By 1987, Cohen himself was signing the artists like Slick Rick, DJ Jazzy Jeff, The Fresh Prince, and Will Smith. You know, this guy brought in Will Smith, this tall Israeli. Eric B., Rakim, a bunch of people I don't know. De La Soul, A Tribe Called Quest. Yeah, a tall Israeli is running this rap shit. It's the guy that was with Kanye West in his based MAGA hat. An interesting thing is, before he was even involved in all of the rap game, he actually worked at the Beverly Hills office of Bank Leumi. Now, this is a powerful Zionist institution, and it was trying to actually establish a Jewish state in Palestine decades before World War II. According to Wikipedia, Bank Leumi is an Israeli bank. It was founded in 1902 in the Anglo-Palestine Company, and it's a very powerful bank. And he was obviously working with them for some reason. Actually, this reminds me of this very Jewish-looking woman, Wolf, Michelle Wolf. I'd never even heard of her. Apparently at the correspondence dinner. And Jews are claiming she's not one of them. She's just telling all these disgusting jokes about her. Just all sorts of gross things. You just look at the Drudge headlines and you'd see all of it. Conservatives kvetching about this Jewess being a Jew, but claiming not to be a Jew. Well, she actually, before working with The Daily Show and those kinds of things as a writer and also as a stand-up comedian, she actually worked on Wall Street for a couple Jewish banks. Yeah, I was just looking into that beforehand. So yeah, this rap mogul worked for Bank Leumi, which was a Zionist bank before getting into the game. Very interesting. Oh, another thing that Yeezy, Kanye West, did before or right after coming out for Trump, is he announced that he is going back to Tel Aviv. The headline from the Jerusalem Post is "The Second Coming of Yeezy. Kanye West anoints Tel Aviv." Oh, it is so Masonic, and he is in this image in gold. Yes, the color of the Donald. He loves everything in gold, including his showers, right? Golden showers, you know, the dossier. So he announces that he is going to be running for president in 2020, but also that he's going to visit Israel. Oh, yeah. And they have the whole biblical narrative running throughout this story. Some 2,000 years after he was reportedly crucified for our sins, Jesus of Nazareth returned to the Holy Land Wednesday night in the form of a rapper, fashion designer, and future presidential candidate from Chicago named Kanye West. Okay, so, yeah, he actually just did this concert. Long a self-appointed deity, or at least a messenger of God on earth, rapper Kanye Yeezy West spent 90 minutes Wednesday working hard, keeping 25,000 people on their feet at the National Stadium in Ramat Gan with a long set list of bangers and what might be called Kanye power ballads. So we're seeing all these crossover events, right? WWE in Saudi Arabia, and now Kanye West appearing with the Israeli who runs the rap shit, according to Mos Def, and the biggest Jew in all of Jew music. And now he's going over to Israel. It's just, you can't make this stuff up. Well, we now have, and the craziest part is that you've got these idiotic white people just fawning all over Kanye. So very based. What a joke. Oh, but they're fawning all over the Zog Emperor. It's just been disgusting the whole time. Thanks, Jews. And speaking of Jews, now let's talk about, after I wet my whistle, let us talk about the various ways that Jews have been portrayed over the years. How they portrayed themselves or how they've been characterized, have caricatures made of them. Mainly animals, but this is just a list that I kind of brainstormed together here. I will check the chat if anybody would like to add something that we missed. And I do say we because I had a little bit of help here. This is a fairly comprehensive list, but I'm sure there are a few you can think about. And we won't be speaking about the, or at least much about the standard animals or totems. Just a quick quote. Animals have an important place in Jewish tradition. Rams, doves, serpents, and asses, oh yeah, to name a few, populate our mythologies and stories. Oh, yes, they certainly do. But first, let's consider pre-humans. What about cavemen? Have you thought about this one? Shia LaBeouf was a child actor. He was in the movie Holes, about children in essentially a prison camp. Huh, I wonder what Jews meant by that one. But since this Jewy-looking child was in the camp, he was nicknamed Caveman. I believe it was by the black children. They started calling him Caveman, so that was his nickname. Caveman, Jewish child. Okay, yeah, he kind of looks like a caveman. What about the movie Ron Perlman? This was one of his first, perhaps his second. It was called Quest for Fire, and this Jewish actor who's been in so many different Jew movies, he played a caveman. Just look at some of them. You'll see why they are considered like cavemen sometimes. There are some arguments made that they are the Neanderthals, and then there are also people who say, no, no, no. The Aryans are the real Neanderthals. Some interesting arguments I've heard on both sides, but we'll not get into that. We'll move on to, of course, the lizards and the snakes. They're all over the mythology, but think of how many times that Jews have been portrayed as lizards or snakes. Or they've held up brazen serpents and all the rest. Oh, yeah. Think of all the National Socialist characterizations of them as snakes. But there is an older, European tradition of venerating the snake that I do think is denigrated by always just comparing Jews to their to the forked-tongued serpent. Oh, that evil serpent. Because you think about the Jewish mythology, Judeo-Christianity, with the evil serpent in the Garden of Eden. But I understand why they are represented this way. It does seem to make some good sense. And they even took great offense to David Icke's presentations because he would be talking about the lizards ruling over everything. And I saw at least some footage of one event, I think it was in Canada, where these Jews were just saying, he's an anti-Semite, he's talking about the Jews, it's all code for the Jews. Well, you've also got aliens, right? That seems to be what they're talking about in They Live. Actually, you could look at The Phantom Menace, the movie that is the fourth Star Wars movie made, where there is that Jewish slave trader alien. He's so obviously Jewish. What about vampires? Oh, yes. Vampires or bats. You think about Batman, Trump. Remember Trump disarmed that robber who was using a bat and then took the bat and he's had the bat. And he's also called himself Batman. He said to a child, yes, I'm Batman. That's a whole nother topic, but especially as most people don't even think that Trump is Jewish. Oh, he is certainly very Jewish. Vampires. I did a whole show on that, though. You can listen to that in the archives. That was some years back, but that's an obvious connection with the bloodsuckers here. Yes, most of these animals that they're compared with, they're usually not the most pleasant ones, like rats. The Juden rat. I heard that Steve Pachesnik was speaking about Juden rats recently, calling George Soros a Juden rat because he worked with the Nazis. They bring the plague, right? There were a few NS caricatures of the Juden rat. They portrayed themselves, though, as mice in the comic book Mouse, which, of course, was about the Holocaust. Oy vey. Flies. I think that this is one that really doesn't get discussed enough, if at all. Flies. The fly rubs its hands together. The fly is really attracted to shit. Okay? Loves it. Oh, yeah. Greatest thing ever for the fly. Oh, also the poisonous mushroom, too. The Jew was compared to the poisonous mushroom, which grows on shit. and there's something to that. Jeff Goldblum played the fly, a man who transforms into a fly. I saw that movie on TV when I was a child. I don't know if I ever watched it all the way through, but I'd always see it on TV. The cockroach, la cucaracha, hides in the darkness. The Jewish cockroach, right? Just all sorts of different bugs, worms. The worm tongue, like the forked tongue. The pigs, like an Animal Farm. The elite Jew pigs. The scorpion with the sign of the scorpion. Under the sign of the scorpion, that was the book that was written about all of the Judeo-Bolshevik crimes in Russia. The absolute slaughter, torture, murder of these people. Starvation, absolute horrible. Yeah, the scorpion and the frog. The scorpion who promises not to sting the frog if the frog takes it over the river. But, of course, he stings the frog. The stupid Pepe, the boiling pot Pepe, because, well, the scorpion stings. That's what it does. That's its nature. Okay? And so that's the nature of the Jew. The Jew Jews. The scorpion stings. You understand? The spider spins its web. Spins its worldwide web. Yes, the National Socialists portrayed the Jew as a spider as well. And you can think about how that could be the case where they trap us in their webs. And their controlled opposition, oh, they like to get us stuck in the mud. They are like a parasite, a virus, a cancer. They've been compared to all. And some more positive animals as well, like the bees. Jerry, I'm thinking of Jerry Seinfeld in Bee Movie. The hive mind Borg of the Jew with the black cube that they travel around in, you know, the black cubes of the Tefillin, and also over there in Mecca. You can even see the cube represented within two-dimensionally within the hexagram, right? The hexagon in the center of the hexagram. They also like to see themselves as lions. Oh, they wish they could be like lions. They are, like the cowardly lions, because they always have the real lions, the prides, doing their fighting for them. They also like to see themselves as being vicious predators, like sharks. They don't mind some of these negative connotations because they like themselves to be seen as being dangerous and at the top of the food chain. Man-eaters. And that brings us to this excellent article here about the real meaning of Jaws. Now, if you want to know about the real meaning of Steven Spielberg, you should go search his name at Renegade Tribune, and you can get into some dark material on this guy. Oh, it all adds up, especially with Heather O'Rourke from Poltergeist fame. But let's get to this movie here. I've been wanting to cover this for a while, but I've never really had the time to do so. This is from a little while ago, so it's a bit dated, at least in the first sentence. This month marks the 40th anniversary of Steven Spielberg's film Jaws. You may be very familiar with the film, but did you know that Jaws can be read as Jewish? For example, why is the film even called Jaws in the first place? Is it because the title is the only one syllable away from the word Jews? Jaws, Jews. Yeah, well, there you go. But there is much more to it than that, and Spielberg and the team behind the movie give us a series of other subtle clues. Jewish writer Howard Sackler was asked to contribute to the screenplay because of his experience as a scuba diver. He did not receive a screen credit, though, as he felt that he didn't work long enough on the film. Nevertheless, Sackler's contributions helped to infuse Jaws with a subsurface Jewish sensibility. Sackler, who hailed from the Bronx, was a classmate of the great Jewish director Stanley Kubrick, whom Spielberg greatly admired. Sackler also wrote the screenplays for Kubrick's first two films, Fear and Desire and Killer's Kiss, respectively. The image of Jews as sharks has also been around for a long time. Consider the idea of a Jewish loan shark raising the vig, or Shylock desiring his pound of flesh. Jaws feasts on multiple pounds of flesh in the film. Just Google Jews and Jaws and any number of images that have replaced the shark with a stereotypically Jewish caricature will come up. The shark is depicted as an outsider who doesn't belong, a wandering nomadic predator. Jaws is an unwanted presence in the small American coastal resort of Amity, which means friendship. And a side note, is actually set on Cape Cod. Really, that's where it's representing with Woods Hole and everything, Woods Hole Oceanographic. And that's where I used to live, just a little side note. And actually, great whites have started going there in great numbers as of recently, but they weren't there, of course, back when this was being filmed. Amity was most likely the type of place that was probably restricted to Jews in the past. The film makes much of the town's close-knit nature and its white picket fences. It is populated by people with such Gentile names as Quint and Brody. Jaws' invasion disrupts this quintessential all-American idyll, as if he was a metaphor for immigration. Spielberg named the mechanical shark Bruce after his lawyer, Bruce Raymer. So, not only is Jaws Jewish, he is also an attorney. Raymer later became national president of defense organization, the American Jewish Committee. Wow. The very idea of having a Jewish shark as a protagonist raises the ugly head of the historic blood libel. It taps into age-old fears of the Jew as predatory, lusting after Gentile women and the blood of young Christian children. All true. Surely, then, it is no coincidence that the first victims in the film are a presumably non-Jewish blonde and a young boy. Indeed, the poster for the film plays on these fears in its depiction of a blonde female swimmer being menaced by the huge, read phallic, shark. And when one character states, it wasn't Jack the Ripper, it was a shark, this allusion implicitly compares Jaws to the infamous Victorian serial killer, who was also alleged to be Jewish. Whenever Jaws appears, the color yellow is prominent in the background. Yellow has long been associated with Jews, ever since it was the color of the badge that Jews were forced to wear in medieval England and later continental Europe, culminating in the Jewish star of the Nazi period and the yellow triangle of the concentration camps. Made only a couple of years after the Yom Kippur War, Jaws can also stand as the tough Israeli Jew. A ruthless and efficient killer, he anticipates Spielberg's 2005 film Munich. If you think this is a stretch, then read the reports of how the Egyptian media and authorities accuse tourist-killing sharks of being Mossad-trained spies. Certainly Spielberg seems to identify with the shark. He said that when he first read the novel, he found himself rooting for the shark because the human characters were so unlikable. This explains the high number of point-of-view shots in the film, where we see things from Bruce's subjective perspective, that is, of the shark. This was also dictated by pragmatic concerns as Bruce, the mechanical shark, kept breaking down. We can also interpret this as a projection of Spielberg's own sense of childhood otherness among a largely Gentile population in which there were few other Jews. Spielberg recalled being physically bullied and subject to anti-Semitic comments as a child. Another Jew is drafted in to help hunt down Jaws, possibly along the lines that it takes one to know one. A young Richard Dreyfuss, whom Spielberg called his alter ego, plays Hooper, the oceanographer, and shark expert. In stereotypical fashion, he is the rationalist, skeptical intellectual whose knowledge is invaluable in the shark hunt. When Hooper takes to the seas with Police Chief Brody, Roy Scheider, and grizzled seaman Quint, who is Robert Shaw, Jackie Mason's quip, "Is there a bigger schmuck on this earth than a Jew with a boat?" immediately comes to mind. Stereotypically, diaspora Jews have not been seen as a seafaring people, and when we see Hooper initially, neither are we convinced. He seems more like a student rabbi who has inadvertently taken a wrong turn. Indeed, when he's aboard the boat, hard-boiled Quint gives him loads of stick, reflecting their public off-screen relationship in which they did not get on at all. Shaw accused Dreyfuss of cowardice and suggested that Dreyfuss would only have a career if there's room for another Jewish character like Paul Mooney. But Hooper does play to type at times. Like a stereotypical Jew, he is always eating, just like the shark, who has no table manners, another stereotypically Jewish trait. But Hooper proves himself to be tougher than that. When he faces off against Jaws, it is the diaspora Jew versus the tough shark, and the former wins. Hooper is thus the brave Jewish outsider coming to the rescue of the Gentiles. He ultimately disputes Jackie Mason's quip about Jews on boats. In fact, he outlives Quint, who becomes the shark's fifth victim, hence his name. Quint is Latin for five or fifth. In an act of possible retribution for his harsh treatment of Hooper, Spielberg states Quint's death as particularly gruesome. Oh yeah, the anti-Semite gets it the worst. That was from a writer who was a professor of film studies at Bangor University, and it appeared in the JC. That would be the Jewish Chronicle. Very, very interesting, I think.
The United States Refugee Admissions Program. And it's not just Hyatt's. Jewish organizations of all kinds across the spectrum of Judaism are issuing statements in support of refugees. These have included the Orthodox Union, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and so many of the Jewish organizations that you heard are co-sponsors of this event.
Welcome back. The last half hour. In the previous segment, I was talking about the nature of the Jew and how the Jew has been portrayed. Finished up with the shark there. Now, there's an interesting article that I was planning to get to perhaps tonight, but I might save it for some other time when I've got some free air. It's called People of the Whorehouse. It was written by Lorenz. It's about the Jews being people of the whorehouse. It makes a lot of sense. It really does. So if you want to learn perhaps why Jews are the way they are, read that article. You might get some insight. But for now, let's leave the Jews for a little bit and talk about us. Are we Europeans? European. I'm a European. I don't know if I like that word, to be honest. I understand the why people embrace it. Because that's our homeland, that area. But is that what we called it? We called our lands, well, lands, such as England, Scotland, Ireland, right? Things like that. Greenland, Iceland. You get the point. Yes, we're Atlantis. Atlantis. This is how we named our lands. But we have Europa. And who was Europa but a non-European goddess who was abducted and raped by Zeus dressed up as a bull? Is that who we want representing us? It's what the EU uses on the coins. The bullion, the bullion, they've raped and abducted Europa, our goddess. No, but as I'm, what I'm getting to is just that we need to understand who we are. And one of the names that our ancestors embraced was Aryan. And I know some of the different meanings of it racially and also the meaning of noble. But I want to break it down here. As I see it, Aryan. First, there is the AR. R. What is that? Well, that is the star. The five-pointed star, the pentagram. That's what it was known in Babylon. In Sumeria, it seems. The pentagram was known as the Ara star. A-R-R-A. Ar-Ra. And, of course, there's the Egyptian god Ra. But it is also just known as the A-R-R. The pentagram is a symbol of the four elements of matter, then being controlled, on the top, by divinity of spirit. It is a symbol of spiritual energy. Within it is encoded the phi ratio. There are a lot of different references to this, it seems, in the books, but most of them are no longer taught. How many of you knew why the star is called a star? S-T-A-R. R. And now maybe that R in Toys R Us, or a rock star with the two R's in the pentagram, well, now you'll start to understand why that is. Now we'll get deeper into this. First, let me read a brief quotation from Al-Azif, the cipher manuscript known as Necronomicon. This was apparently from 730, the year 730, in Damascus. Of the three symbols carved, the first is a sign of our race from beyond the stars, and is called Ara, in the tongue of the scribe who taught it to me, an emissary of the elder ones, in the tongues of the eldest city of Babylon. It was Ur. It is the sigil of the covenant of the elder gods, and when they see it, they who gave it to us, they who will not forget us. They have sworn, spirit of the skies, remember. Remember. I think we do remember instinctually. We see that symbol and we know. And that is why it has been used by our enemies against us. That is why the red star represents communism. They have taken our symbols and subverted them. Inverted them oftentimes. You see how the GOP logo took the upright pentagram and actually turned it upside down. That happened perhaps around 2008 or so. And there are plenty of photos with people like Hillary Clinton in front of an American flag with all the stars pointing down. This is an article I wrote in 2013 called Symbolic Subversion of Arya. Before I actually get to this, let's just talk about Aryan. So the first part, R, seems to be representative of our race from beyond the stars, and the pentagram, the symbol, our symbol. Well, what's Yan then? Y-A-N. Well, the way I see it, that could be representing light, the white side of things, of the yin-yang. So Aryan can be translated as pentagram or race of light. Race of white or pentagram of light. However you want to kind of see that one. That's just my interpretation here. There's recently been an interesting discussion here at Renegade Tribune, of course dated, that was 5 years ago, concerning the meaning and use of the word Aryan. So I decided I would add my 5 pence to the topic. I am going to come at this from a different angle than most, so bear with me while I explain some important aspects concerning the mathematical and symbolic world of the ancient Aryans. The Sumerians, some Aryans, and later the Babylonians, who kickstarted the civilizations in Mesopotamia, considered the pentagram to be a sign of the Aryans. The pentagram is also a pictogram for UB or AR, which represents both a plow and an angle. The five-sided star was known as Ara, or just A-R-R, to the ancient Aryans. It appears that this figure also symbolized their origin as Aryans, from the stars. Today, the pentagram is a symbol for the occult. Though you will see this symbol in Christian churches, example, Pentecostal churches, right? Pent. Huh? It is connected to the worship of Lucifer, actually, who is punished by Yahweh for bringing light and knowledge to the world. And the planet Venus, which is regarded as the light bearer in the early morning sky. The pentagram is an appropriate symbol for Venus, since the planet forms this shape when its successive inferior conjunctions are viewed from Earth and plotted over the course of 8 years. The secrets of the pentagram, from Greek pentagrammon, meaning five lines, were passed down through the ages by initiates of the mystery schools. The Pythagoreans famously held the pentagram as their sacred symbol, and five was considered the number of love, life, and the creative principle. You have probably seen the pentacle flipped upside down by the conspiracy movement, with Baphomet in the middle, and told that this symbol represents death and evil, you know, all that satanic stuff. If you actually look at the dimensions of the pentagram and the pentagon with the relation to phi, the golden ratio, the Fibonacci sequence, you see that the pentagram is absolutely amazing. This is a very, very powerful symbol. You can take a look at this article and you'll see what I'm talking about. It is obvious that the controllers of our world would prefer to keep the philosophy of phi to themselves. Philosophy, right? Lest we eat of the fruit of knowledge and know some underlying truths of our reality. This is why Yahweh condemns Eve as evil. She took the present from the serpent. Also, do note that present and serpent are anagrams, as I will be presenting some information regarding presents. The five-sided figure, and again, think about five. Phi, V. Phi, V. And the pentagram represents phi incredibly. It's an important symbol. Okay, that's what I'm trying to get across to you here. Very important. The five-sided figure is a very rich symbol, not only providing perfect mathematical proportions, but also serving to symbolize elemental concepts. Now, let's consider a few places where we will often see the pentagram, known simply as a star, Saint R, S-T-R, right, in our current society. In the Christian tradition, Mother Mary, and you will see the AR right inside of Mary, right, gives birth to the light of the world. So the AR gives birth to light. Isn't that interesting? The angel or star on top of things in the pagan Yule celebration seems to birth the world tree, Yggdrasil, or the family tree, since it emanates from between the angel's legs. Do you know what I'm talking about? You see the pentagram on top of the Christmas tree, or you see the angel. Either one, it seems to be representing Mary or Venus, birthing the light of the world, or the lighted Christmas tree. Considering that the pentagram is a symbol of Venus, it makes sense that the female angel and pentagram are somewhat interchangeable in a traditional decoration of the tree. My family would actually light it up from here to here as well, usually with the angel. There is also the tinsel kind of serpent climbing the tree of Yggdrasil, isn't there? Since Mary can be represented as the pentagram, I guess it follows that the army would also use this symbol, as army is an anagram of Mary. Army, and oh yeah, they use that five-sided star, don't they? And where does the army get its orders? From the Pentagon. Oh, there we go, right. But let's get back to the Christmas tree for a moment. If some ignorant parents are going to buy his or her kid a Christmas present to put under the tree, some money might be spent, spent, you know, with dollars, which have the serpent climbing the pole as the symbol, you know, the cash symbol, and on some plastic crap at a famous toy store. Actually, this toy store is now going out of business. It has closed up shop and they have a liquidation sale. Toys R Us. And that R is in a pentagram. Right. Isn't that interesting? Now, so consider the logo of Toys R Us for a moment. The backwards R is, it's just a cute way to represent a childish misunderstanding of our English alphabet, right? Oh, that's just how a kid might do it, right? No. Nope. That R is reversed for a very specific reason, and it has to do with the Rus. Consider Toys Rus. Toy, you know, instead of Toys R Us, Toys Rus. Well, the Rus was actually the Viking tribe that founded Russia. And let's consider the Cyrillic alphabet. You see the Cyrillic alphabet, you look at that last letter. The last letter is a backwards R, and this is the Yah letter. Yah means I, the personal pronoun. R equals Yah. Arya. Arya? So are you following so far? Arya. So now let's replace the quotation marks in Toys R Us with eyes. You know, since it represents I, the R, okay, it's hard to follow, but you get Toy Sirius. You could probably see how I'm getting that. Toys Irius, Toy Sirius. Sirius, an incredibly important star, actually linked to the giraffe, and you see Jeffrey Giraffe there, and he plays a central role, the dog star, in Egyptian astrology. Germanic lore, and much more, like the Dogon tribe, Dogon, Sirius the Dog Star. And it actually is the logo for Sirius Radio, where you have the dog with the pentagram as the eye, right? The eye of the celestial dog. Of course, you've got many companies using this as their logo. Here are just a few. Macy's, Converse, Heineken, OnStar. Walmart used to. Now they have the six-pointed star. Sirius, right? Starbucks. Many, many more stars in the night sky, but some obviously are held more important than others. It's often hard to pinpoint what celestial body is actually being referenced in mythology, though. For example, in the Prose Edda of the Norse, there is a giant named Arvandil, or Arendil, whose big toe, or toes, was frozen in a river and subsequently thrown into the sky by Thor. The name of the giant comes from Ausi Vandilas, meaning luminous wanderer. Ausi is the Anglo-Saxon name of the goddess Easter, which is where we get the name of the pagan bunny holiday. Some believe Arvandil's toe to be either a star or a planet, with likely contenders being Venus or Sirius. Arvandil. However, others will say that both toes are in the sky. One is seen as Alcor in the Big Dipper and the other as Rigel in Orion. I mention this story to show how it is difficult to come to a consensus regarding a star known as Arvandil, but also because some seemingly irrelevant side stories could hold more importance than we are led to believe. J.R.R. Tolkien was apparently inspired by Arendil, which is Arvandil, using a derivative form of the name in Lord of the Rings, where Arendil is both a star and a female elf. Here's a quote. "Hail Arendil, brightest of stars." It's quite analogous to "Hail Arendil, brightest of angels," which is found in Christ I, an Anglo-Saxon poem. I like the name of Tolkien's goddess, but Luminous Wanderer also makes me think of Odin, the one-eyed master of the magical arts. Oh, arts. Think of all the words that begin with R. A-R. I hope you know that I am not implying... Oh, I show the one-eyed boss from the second in command to Dr. Evil in the Austin Powers film. So I show him there, you know, being at the top of Starbucks, right? He owned Starbucks, and he's the one-eyed guy there. Okay. So I hope you know I'm not implying there's a Germanic death cult of Luciferians behind the evil empire of today. Folks, you can't make this stuff up. Our symbols and stories have been with us for thousands of years and have a profound impact upon our subconscious minds. This is why essential information is now kept from us and used against us. The pentagram is no longer being used to illustrate the beauty of creation, the movements of celestial bodies, and the origin of our people. This sacred symbol has been perverted and prostituted, influencing us to fork over bucks for crap we don't need. If this is the case with one of our symbols, we need to come to terms with the kind of damage our enemies have been able to do with other symbols and hijack stories. And then we should rectify things. Hopefully, this short foray into the golden ratio and its connections with our AR will help to illustrate and illuminate the sacred symbol of our people. I show a man making the pentagram. And just think about it. If you slice that apple, which was given as a present to Eve by the serpent, what do you see in there with the seeds? Well, yeah, you see the seeds cut apart. If you cut it in a certain way, right, in half, you see the seeds cut apart, forming that pentagram of man, of our race from beyond the stars. Perhaps it is but a small taste of the golden apples of Norse and Greek tradition. This little knowledge of the golden ratio as it relates to our people. But if we are to be real Aryans, we need the knowledge of the gods. We can increase our capacity to understand and influence the world around us. I consider this practice star arts. Right? Star and arts. Of course, anagrams, everyone. We need to become as gods, the shining stars of our story. Thanks for your attention. Oh, yes. And if you look at the human body, everyone, you will see that our star, our human body, right? We are exhibiting the phi ratio all over. We are made up of the phi ratio, which is represented within the star. We are connected to the star in so many different ways. The backwards R, right, of Cyrillic means I. Yah means I. I hope you get where I'm going with this. It's not just a coincidence that Rockstar, and that was the company that Michael Wiener Savage's son founded, that it has the pentagram with a backwards R and a forwards R in it. This is the Ara. And it's the Ara of the Aryans and has been stolen by the Jews and used against us. They use that symbol to induce us to go fight each other in these blood baths. Fratricidal blood baths that have taken such a toll on us. Now, let's just briefly consider how the AR is still being used against us. Think about the one weapon that is always related to domestic terrorism and extremism. The weapon of the Aryan is the AR, isn't it? Such as the AR-15. A lot of people think this just stands for assault rifle, but you could use that assault rifle, AR. That is what they are trying to take from us, the AR, the power over life and death. The AR. The alt-right? That's their logo, AR, isn't it? You've also got American Renaissance, AR. They're controlling the AR in so many different ways, but it is our star. Our star. If anybody has anything to add about this and anything else that I've discussed here in this hodgepodge of a show, you've got just a few moments left, so please do chime in. There is going to be a show coming up here next week wherein I will be having... This should be going on next Sunday. Maybe something will come up. I don't know. But this show will be about the Bible as natural law. This is something that is being pushed by people like Jan Ervin and some of his guests. And this is absolutely ludicrous. So it is going to be addressed by Shauna, myself, and Heathen Vegan on a roundtable. Coming up also on the network, I can announce the Tuesday coming up will be Chris H. making a return with a podcast. And then the following Tuesday, we'll be having Hari, not like Hari Krishna, H-A-R-I-J-S, coming back to do his show. He hasn't been on in a while, so it'll be good to have him back as a wild card. And I'm sure we'll have Heathen Vegan jumping back into the wild card slot sometime soon as well. I really appreciate all the contributions that people give, and I'm not just talking about the money. That is very much a contribution I appreciate. But the people who contribute their thoughts to the network as wildcard hosts, as hosts, regular hosts here, and as people who leave good, thoughtful comments or call into shows Also, can't forget about RenegadeTribune.com. A lot going on over there. Please do check it out. I put a lot of time and effort into that site, and I do think that a lot of the content that is featured there is very pertinent to our world. I do really try to go through and handpick only the most interesting stories of the ones that are coming out there. I don't want to overwhelm you, though I know that the constant flow of information can do that to anyone. A lot of topics have been covered here tonight. We have discussed our enemy, their controlled opposition tactics, and also our own nature and the nature of our symbol. We are beings of light. What we are. Oh, yes, and Hari is not really pronounced Hari. I think it's not Harris, it's Hari. How do you even say that? But it does have the AR right in there as well. Well, I can't really conclude this with some kind of coherent synopsis of everything or takeaway message, but I will say that it is very important that we continue on strong, that we don't allow our enemies to get the better of us through their controlled opposition, through their psychological warfare, through their fear-mongering. We cannot be afraid of them. We need to see them as the creatures that they are. And that is why I think a lot of the caricatures of them are important. We need to view them in their true form. And isn't it just amazing how they really do often seem to take on the characteristics of these different creatures? I didn't even mention vultures. The vulture capitalists. Yeah, that's another good one. Hey, brainstorm in the comments. Let me know what you think. What did I miss? There is so much more to come, everyone, so please do stay tuned to the network. A lot of great hosts, a lot of great content. I'll be back with you again next week. Please, please, do what you can to bring our cause to the next level. Talk to you all soon. Haris. Thank you, Level 6 Toaster.
You're a slave to the capitalist system, which is ruled by the global elite. What happened to the individual? What happened to working class white?
How do you now see the future of the issue of immigration developing now across the whole of the European continent based on what you're seeing there in Germany?
This is a very good point, because immigration is the future. You cannot work and live in a globalized world, in the middle of the world, in Europe, without immigration.
So there's a second thing in that black box, an unrelenting stream of immigration, non-stop. Non-stop. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.